You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning. It is me, Aaron Carrera, and I'm coming at you live Thursday, March 21st, 10:04 a.m. Pacific time. And I'm talking like Howard Cosell. I don't know why, but I don't know why, but I am. Anyway, I'm happy to be here with you live today, live, if you're listening live, if you're listening in the archive, obviously, it's whatever day and time it is, wherever you may happen to be. It's been a whirlwind few weeks for me. I know I've been here doing some shows or pre-recording shows, but have you ever had that experience where you worked at an office, or in my case, I've worked at the only regular jobs I've ever had is I worked at spas when I used to do massage therapy. And I can't say that's a regular job, but in terms of like a job where I had to be there and I couldn't just walk away. Like I have worked in restaurants, but I've never lasted long in restaurants. Mainly unless I'm performing as the singer, that's a totally different thing. But so if you've ever had like a normal job that you go to every day and then you go away for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or however long for a vacation or something, and you come back and your life is totally different. Your life is totally changed. And you're a different person and you're so excited and like you don't know how you're even going to fit in at the office anymore or how is it going to be different, and you're almost maybe even nervous, maybe you are going to cry because maybe you don't like the office or maybe you love it, and you're excited to share with your office wife or your office bestie or the people at lunch that you have lunch with all about your experience, and you go to the office and it's the same office that it was when you left. It's like, what do you do, right? Have you ever had that? I remember the first few trips I ever took to India, and this has happened my whole life, but it was very pronounced with India because I had such extremely beautiful, mystical, mind-blowing experiences. And I remember, I mean, I've never had a normal life, so it's not like I came back to an office, but like I came back to, my example would be like the same roommate, with the same, always keeping the curtains closed, never wanting to let sunlight in, with the same hogging of the, she had a thing where she couldn't stand empty cupboards or empty refrigerators. So even though I had my shelf and my cupboard, if I was a little empty, she'd have to fill it up with her food. And then it felt, you know, like the same stupid roommate stuff, right? Like, I mean, she's a wonderful woman, but I'm saying like roommate issues. And it was like, how do I go from I've changed as a person, I look at the world differently, how do I go from that and come back to this dynamic that's wanting to pull me back into the same old habits, the same old patterns, the same old way of being, the same old reactions, the same old responses, the same old speeches, the same old jokes, which some of that is cool, some of that is fun. This is how a human is made, right? Patterns. This is how everything in nature is made. Patterns, building up on patterns. But, of course, the response I have, the answer I have now as a wise woman is you just do. You just show up and you allow everything. You don't need anybody to understand your enlightenment or your awakening or your hot fling you had on that. I mean, because this could be anything, right? It could be the hot fling you had on vacation, or that you fell in love, or that you woke up in India, or that you lost a parent and you had to go home for 2 weeks to deal with this tragic loss. And now you'll never be the same in a very sad way. You know, whatever it is, you just allow it. You just go back to, you don't go back to work. You go to work and you allow it. And you be you. And when the old pattern comes up, the consciousness that preceded your awakening or your falling in love or your very difficult experience, how will you know that it's the consciousness coming back? You'll know because you'll be like, either A, you'll find yourself sort of like, I found myself doing this yesterday. I was on film set, and I'll get to that in a minute. And I found myself being like a version of Aaron that I rarely am, to be honest, which is extremely young, playful, yes, people pleasery, but like teddy bear Aaron, Like I, my truest, deepest nature is cuddly. I just want to love everybody, and I just want to love up on everybody and cuddle them. And I grew up in Minnesota where you don't touch people, like we do now. It's interesting because my little nephews are just so kissy and huggy and lovey, and my niece, that kind of changed, and it's easier, I suppose, for the grandparent, but like, I didn't get hugged or aggrandized or complimented or any of that kind of stuff. I was loved. I was definitely loved. But you know what I'm saying? It was just really interesting to watch that version of me come up because I was just so happy for everybody there. I mean, I was happy for myself, but I was somewhere between fairy godmother Erin and teddy bear Erin. And I was like, oh, look at who's coming out. That's fascinating. Trust me, we talk a lot on this show about like the consciousnesses, the Erins that come out that are in negative resistance, right? Like, oh my God, why am I always the one to, whatever my burdens or my trials or the repeated things that always happen to me are, The question is really about the consciousness that precedes all of this. It's like we have all of these spiritual and psycho-spiritual ideas like, oh, well, just if you want to manifest something, change your thoughts, then you'll change your beliefs, change, and by changing your beliefs, you will change your biochemistry and you'll change your what you're manifesting and attracting in this world. And that is true. But it's like there's always these little pockets where I see, or I shouldn't call them pockets, I should call them roadblocks, where I see all of us slipping, which is what about that consciousness that we don't want to look at? A consciousness we're ignoring, that consciousness we're trying to sidestep. And I'm not talking necessarily only about changing your thoughts and being this overly power-packed, life-hacking, juicing person, which is cool, right? So that you can become a billionaire or whatever. Although there is something worked into nature there that will prevent everybody on Earth from being a billionaire unless we greatly reduce the value of what it means to be a billionaire. That's called carbon. But I don't want to get into the fact that carbon is a finite resource. Wealth is not. Carbon is. Loving life is not a finite resource. Natural resources are finite resources, right? You get where I'm going with that. So my point being, there are other consciousnesses and other ways of looking at what it means to be wealthy, what it means to be happy, what it means to be joyful, what it means to be you, what it means to live your life, what it means to be in your heart, right? Like, anyway, the consciousness that precedes all of that, that's what I think is valuable to look at. And I know it's like, no, ergo, whatever I want. But my question is, why? What is that going to give you? Like, if that's what you really want, cool, right? Like, I go for what I want in life, but too, I get it. Although it's interesting because a lot of the things that happen to me in life are not the way I thought. Almost nothing is the way I thought it would be. And I think the reason I love my life so much is because I really, it's not that I don't get excited or that I don't have like a wish for the way things would go, but that when I catch myself, because I catch myself all the time being like, oh, I'm attached to this outcome and I'm totally depressed. It's like, really? My husband totally called me on that on Friday. He was like, I get that there's chemical depression and there's emotional depression, there's psychological things, but like, I mean, life is pretty good. You can't, I was like, yeah, that's true. There are different tools we can use to get ourselves out of that. And then there's my question, which is what's the consciousness underneath it? What is consciousness? What is it like to have a consciousness? What is our consciousness doing for us? A lot, actually, right? A lot. But where is it helping? Where is it harming? Do I want to look at that consciousness? What if I actually said, yes, I'm here on this earth. I'm playing this game. I'm here. It's 2024. And I happen to be like me personally. I happen to be Erin. I'm a woman of a certain age. I'm a creative person, a Renaissance woman. All the different ways that I can have an identity, right? All the identities I have that I don't like. Oh, I have body image issues, eating disorders. Never quite have an amount of money in the bank that gives me the total freedom I want. But I, on the other hand, that's not really true because I always do whatever I want. I've always, do you know that? Like, I've always traveled. I mean, there have been times I've not done some things, right? Like, Like when I got married, I didn't have a wedding with 100 people because I didn't have the money for it, right? When I've done certain vacations, I'm not necessarily going and staying at Le Georges V in Paris. Although I've stayed at very fancy hotels as a gift from other people, or sometimes, have you ever played that game? I don't know if they still have Priceline where you used to like name your own price, but sometimes I've really lucked out getting like on an off day, like a 4-star hotel for $75 a night because there's just an empty room and they just need to fill it and get, the bare minimum in there. Oh my God, that was so fun. But times I've done that, right? It's like, that's cool too. I think it's fun to have all experiences, but that's me. But in reality, I don't have the consciousness of someone who doesn't get to travel because I've just always traveled. I just always have. Now it's like, okay, I don't even necessarily need to travel. It's actually like, I kind of want to stay home for a little while, but I have to travel, right? So it's like I'm in such a habit of traveling that my habit has taken over. It's the same thing with exercise, right? Like I've just exercised not every day, but regularly since I was a teenager. So that I don't ever not unless I'm sick, right? And sometimes lately I've been exercising less, but it's just the discipline is there, the habit is there, the consciousness is there. But beyond even these simple ideas, and the reason I'm talking about all this is because there's a very deep and profound spiritual value to what is consciousness. And I believe that's what Buddha or Jesus was pointing at. And many others. Those are just the two that I've been reading lately, reading about, thinking about. But yes, of course, we can use our consciousness on these, what I would call sort of mid-strata levels, right, of our psychology and desires. We can use this to really help ourselves. I mean, this is how I learned how to not be a love addict, how to not be in unrequited love relationships, how to not get myself hooked again on some guy, right? And therefore, later, how to not hook a guy, because I used to hook people too, and girls. And trust me, I still want to do it. I catch myself in the habit, like, I like to charm. I like for people to be in love with me. I want people, not like unrequited love, but I want people to love me, right? I love that. I love charming people. I do. But it's like, am I using that responsibly? Gotta be careful. And when I catch myself doing that, I understand that it's some kind of survival mechanism. And instead, I go, oh, hand on heart, can I just be just Aaron? Can I be just Aaron now? Oh, that's vulnerable, right? The minute I said that, the minute I kind of wanted to cry a little because like my little heart just opened right up. But it's like, whoa, that means I'm not looking for what you think of me, I'm not looking to get validated by you. I'm just being, and I'm looking to have room for you to just be with me. Now, this is me. These are the things that I'm interested in right now. But my example of the unrequited love relationships as a habit, as a consciousness stands, right? Because it's like you think when you start out in life, you think you're going for this. You think you're looking for the one, and you think it's so that you can have this destiny of falling in love and having the most amazing relationship in the world. And maybe that's true. Maybe that was true for me. And then that journey led me to meet so many unsuitable people and to fall in love with so many unsuitable people and to have the chemical experience of falling in love and then that chemical bruising of when it wouldn't work out for a variety of reasons, some of times which were because they were just absolute narcissists, sometimes because they were addicts, sometimes because I had become what they wanted in order to get them. And then once I relaxed and I wasn't what I had presented as. And they were like, who is this person? What did you do with the Aaron I fell in love with? And because that happened to me, vice versa, because somebody would present in a certain way to get me to fall in love with them. And then after time, their other colors would come out, not because they were liars, but because when they weren't trying to swashbuckle their way into my life, suddenly now, as we're getting to really know each other and having intimacy, it's like, who are you? I don't want to be with somebody who's doing drugs. Or who are you? Like, I don't want to be with somebody who always has to be right. Like, I don't need to be right all the time, but like, I don't want to be wrong all the time either. That's not fair or true, right? Or whatever. I'm thinking about my personal experiences. So So this initial desire to fall in love leads you to, for me, led me to get into all these wrong relationships and then get into this habit of unrequited love. And it was by me questioning the consciousness, by me doing that one woman show and noticing that the common denominator in all my relationships, unfortunately, was me. So where was my responsibility in this? Was my picker off? Yes. Was I going for drama? Sometimes, maybe. Was I ignoring signs? Maybe sometimes. Was I needing something intense rather than something profound? And why? As a distraction from all the other ways I'd been running away from myself in my life. Because I had been running away from myself in my life. I had been people pleasing. I had been trying to make other people happy and not following my dreams. And so it was like not just this one little, it was like when I started unraveling the knot. Turns out I had to unravel an entire tapestry and then sew a brand new tapestry. And that's what I'm talking about. And the question is, what if you don't have to have a tapestry at all? Well, of course, that's not the deal for humanity. The deal for humanity is you're a human. So you are built on your little cells creating patterns, digestion, rest, excretion, creation, maintenance, balance, creation. Maintenance, destruction, I meant to say, right? Like that's, I'm looking at the triad of life, right? What do you want in life? What does it take to get it? How do you maintain it? When does it end? The cycle of life, right? So, in order to be a human anyway, you still have to have a body, unless you're a ghost. But that's a whole other conversation. Maybe you don't need a consciousness. Maybe that's what happened with some of these mystical saints and angels and bodhisattvas and people of note whose names we know because they were so spiritually enlightened, right? The most of us aren't going to get there, and I think that's fine. That's cool. Like I'm here to be Aaron or whatever is the consciousness. That we're just currently using the name Aaron to just sort of put a as a little thumbnail profile picture there, right? Like, oh yeah, Aaron. Yeah. But we know, just like if we say, oh yeah, Jay. JJ, my wonderful Jay Varvel, my producer, like Jay is, of course, so much more than just Jay. Jay is perfect just as Jay, too. It's not like Aaron's not enough. Jay's not enough. It's like, no. It's just that we're using the name just as a symbol so we understand, just so we can categorize and move on, which of course we have to do. Of course we have to do, right? Tiger dangerous, kitty cat sweet, unless they got claws, and look out, right? Puppy dog fun, darling, feed them, right? Whatever. So the consciousness. That's what I didn't realize I was going to start talking about consciousness, but when I'm thinking about what we've been talking about these past few weeks about using acting tools to have a better life. Because what we're really doing is we're pulling apart the psychology of what it means to be human, the spirituality, the physicality, the ontological aspects, the philosophical aspects, the religious aspects. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be you, your version of a human? What is it like to have a consciousness? What does it mean? What does it mean to have a consciousness? What does it mean to have your consciousness? Do you like your consciousness? Are you able to even see it? Are you able to see it? And if you're not, that's okay too. Can we? Can any of us? Can we only see another's consciousness? Hence the mirror reflection that gives us that feeling of resistance or acceptance, right? Life is resistance. Resistance isn't necessarily in and of itself a bad thing, right? Inertia. An object in motion will stay at motion. An object at rest will stay at rest. And then there's the pressures that will force against an object, either in motion or at rest, right? Well, isn't that just all of life in another way of saying? So we're talking about creation, maintenance, and destruction. Another way we could look at that is desire, action, and obstacle, right? You have a desire. You come up with the actions you're going to take to fulfill that desire, and then you're going to come up against obstacles. And what do you do about those obstacles? Right? Beginning, middle, end. It could be another way to look at it, except that it's a circle that never ends. storytelling is actually kind of similar, especially a lot of modern day storytelling. We're really into, they say everyone only wants short form TikTok things. I don't think that's true because I'm like, have you watched Marvel movies? They're like 3 hours long and there's 23 of them. Right? There are people who watch all of them. I've only, to be honest, I've actually, I think, only watched parts of some of them because that's not my particular jam. But I'm down for a 3 hour movie, no problem, if I like it. Or long series, right? My God, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, has been on since 2004. So I think last time we were talking about, well, I'll recap for everybody. So we've talked about the importance of being in your body, being present. We've talked about your environment. We've talked about listening. We've talked about the moment before. Where were you coming from? Where are the people in your lives coming from? We talked about your overall driving force, love or death or power, and how love is ultimately the overall driving force. We talked a little bit about stakes. How important is it that you get this person to hear you, that you get the raise, that you get the man, that you get the house, that you get to your business on time, that you get in the car and get gas, that you get up and make a cup of coffee. Trust me, I don't drink coffee anymore. So my stakes for making a cup of coffee in the morning, very low. Very, very low. But I have people in my life for whom that cup of coffee is as high stakes as a freaking heart attack. You know what I'm saying? I know you do. Right? We talked about, I think we talked about, I have a note that we did, but I think we're going to talk about it some more. We talked about obstacles. And I think we talked about how in acting, the person you're talking to is the most important person in the world, the love of your life, the most important person in the world. And the proof of that is if they weren't, you wouldn't be talking to them. And if there's other people in a scene with you, that those people become an obstacle. Why? Because what they may or may not hear, you are going to be conscious of. Well, not all of us. I know some neurodiverse people lack this part of, not all, but some neurodiverse people don't do subtext, right? They don't cover up their true intentions. What they say is what they mean. There are increasing numbers of people for whom that's true. But also, confusingly, like if you've ever read or seen, oh, what is it called? That wonderful book, and then it became a play, A Noise in the Night. I might have it right here. Where is it? The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And the narrator of that book and later the play is somebody who's neurodiverse who just says the truth and doesn't hide it. Doesn't do, therefore, right? Doesn't do political correctness or doesn't do polite society speech, right? If any of you have seen Poor Things, and I know that's controversial, I loved it. I've seen it twice. I loved it so much, I'd watch it again. I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. I think that if people are up in arms about it, I get there's a lot of like sex or there's a lot of like the moment. I don't want to give away any spoilers, but there's parts that people maybe are coming at from a consciousness that doesn't understand that it's somebody's choice to participate in a specific way with sex. And I get it. When we live in a world where sex is a commodity, someone's beauty is a commodity, and the playing field isn't equal, is it really a choice? These are interesting questions. I'm kind of being a little shady because I don't want to give away spoilers on the movie Poor Things. But the point is, like that main character in Poor Things, she doesn't do subtext. So she has all these wild adventures and gets into all this basically kind of trouble because she doesn't do subtext. So she doesn't understand people lie. Even well-intended society people are lying. Are they lying? No, they're just participating in polite speech, right? Am I lying when I'm omitting things? I mean, I'm from a place known for being passive aggressive. It's like if somebody listens to my album and says, "Oh, that's different." And we all in Minnesota, we all know that's different means I don't like that. But nobody wants to say that because nobody wants to be mean. And there's other ways to say things, right? It could just be like, oh, that's not my taste. Like I had a friend say, you know, your music is not to my liking. Okay. Right? Like it did hurt my feelings a little, but on the other hand, it hurt my feelings when my brother said, oh, yeah, that's different, huh? It's like, I know they both meant the same thing. Okay. But when we're talking with somebody, I'm talking to you all. You're the most important people in the world to me. Right? Who am I even talking to? I'm talking to Aaron. I'm talking to Jay. Aaron, me. I'm talking to Jay. I'm talking to a few people. I know there's people in the chat room. I haven't said hello yet. I'll get there. And then the idea that, let's say, for example, if I had like my niece was visiting or if my husband was in the other room or something like that, and I wanted to talk about something, love and relationship, and I know their listening becomes an obstacle, right? It's going to curb what you may say. And in high stakes situations, right? I can really, it's in, like, it's just something to be interesting. Now, of course, this is going to be true at varying levels, right? It's like if you're just ordering, but oh, here's a good example. I was gonna say here's a bad example, but it's actually a good example. If you live in America, you probably have some issue with food because people are really freaked out about food, right? Like the sugar content in something, or let me enjoy my sugar in peace. Let me enjoy my fake food in peace. Let me enjoy my real food in peace. Let me eat butter. No, I better not eat butter. Okay, now I need to go on a diet. Or no, I'm not going to diet because I'm anti-diet, because I'm health at every size, because diet is. Dieting comes from a patriarchal racist point of view, but oh, but what about my heart? What about studies have shown about, right? We've got so much mumbo jumbo chitter chatter that we've just really lost the plot on just eating. So that, like, when I go out to dinner, I do everything in my power not to talk about food or diets. Like, oh my God, please. I'll talk about how delicious something is or talk about recipes. I'll talk about workouts, exercise, or sports, maybe, but not as punishment. Like I remember once I was in Las Vegas. One of my best girlfriends is a personal trainer. She invited me to come with her. She had a convention and she invited me to come with her just spend time together and hang out in Vegas for a little while. So by day I was working at One to Listen and at night I was doing Vegas with her. And by day she was doing her personal trainer fitness convention, learning all sorts of cool things like training menopausal women or functional fitness for elderly people, right? Like just learning all kinds of cool stuff for her clientele. And then at night we go like, oh, one night we went out for dinner at a French restaurant, or one night we went to Meow Wolf's grocery store, the art installment, which was so cool. One night we went to the fitness, the personal trainers conventions dance party. Was like an award ceremony, big dinner gala. And it was interesting because at the beginning of the night, all these personal trainers were just drinking shots of tequila and eating just greens and chicken. And then all of a sudden, they all just started eating the pasta and then going for the cookies. And they had these massive cookies, like the size of, they were like the, I have a little, I don't know how to describe it to you, but basically they were like these 6-inch across cookies, right? Giant, delicious, amazing cookies. And I sat down and I was eating one, and the lady next to me was eating one too. And she said, this cookie is, and then she gave me the number of calories in the cookie, and I was like, I don't care, I don't care, I don't do calories. She looked at me like I, you know, had two heads, and then she said, well, I'm gonna have to walk, you know, 7,000 steps or 5 miles to work this off, and I was like, or you could just, you know, not worry about it. You're a personal trainer. You exercise all the time. I'm sure your body will just do what it does with calories. Like, your body probably will just, you know. Consume it and you'll move on. She's like, no, oh no, I have to. And I was like, I didn't want to battle her beliefs, but she kept insisting. And I was like, dude, really? You don't have to do that. I don't have to do that. You can, I could, but why? Just eat the cookie. You know, why torture yourself? Or if, you know, if you're gonna torture yourself, now maybe she liked it, but I don't think so. You can torture yourself, just don't eat the cookie then and have some pineapple. But I get it. It's like, no, everyone else is having a cookie. I want a cookie too, right? Don't even get me started on diet culture, but I guess I started myself. But it's kind of an interesting idea because suddenly she's talking to me I'm the most important person in her life because she's got to convince me that I need to go on a 7-mile hike to get rid of this cookie I'm eating. I wasn't about to tell her that I'd also enjoyed pasta and quite a bit of wine. And I wasn't going to go on any 7-mile march that night. I was just going to do my normal thing the next day, and be fine and choose that it was fine. I was going to choose that it was fine for myself because I used to be like that. I used to count every calorie and work out for every single little morsel. And if I think about the journals and diaries of some of my favorite authors, and then I think about when I go back and I read my journal and half of my journal is counting calories, I just want to weep. Like, how fucking boring. Sorry. Boring. Fucking boring. Like, is that what my life is consisting of? Oh, I ate 1,800 calories today and I went for a 7-mile hike. Like, boring. What a waste. What a waste of my intellect. Maybe not for this lady. Maybe it was the exact perfect task for her intellect, but for me, I'm like, are you kidding me? I want to do psychic work. I want to learn about consciousness. I want to write screenplays and novels. I want to sing songs. I want to travel the world. I want to understand why people think the way they do. And I understand why this lady thinks the way she does, because she grew up in that consciousness. She grew up in diet culture. And like, so she's talking to me. And meanwhile, we're at a table full of other personal trainers. So all these people who might be listening to our conversation, they become our, for each of us, an obstacle. Now, I don't need to be right, right? I mean, of course I do. I'm a human. Like, hello, have you met me? Of course. But I mean, like, I'm at a table full of experts. It's not my expertise. I just know for myself that I don't really, that if I start counting calories, I'm going to have an eating disorder. If I ignore them and I just eat whatever I want, sort of in moderation, when I get hungry, then I do better. Life is just easier and better. And overall, I just kind of don't think about it. Right? It's like I haven't weighed myself since I was, I don't know, I guess I weighed myself once in my 30s and I didn't like it. So I was like, well, I'll never do that again. Right? So I'm like, somebody will tell me if I need to take care of something, or they'll put me on Lipitor or whatever has to happen. Don't care. I'm like, my prerogative, right? But suddenly I'm like, okay, for me, my obstacle is my girlfriend I'm sitting right next to. She's sitting here listening to the conversation. I don't want to make her look bad. I don't want to be like that rude woman that she brought to her convention, right? So my obstacle, so my goal actually in this conversation, to be honest with you, was I wanted to get out of the damn conversation as soon as possible because A, it was boring. B, it was triggering old eating disorder issues for me that I don't go there. I don't like it. I just don't. And C, because it's like, you know what? They're playing cool dance music. They're starting to play like all kind of cool dance music. I want to go dance. I want to eat my cookie. I want to get another glass of wine, and then I'm going to go like shake my booty and have some fun. That's what I want to do. I want to get out of this conversation. And this sweet woman, she wasn't like, she was way nicer than me, right? Like, she was a super lovely person. You could tell. But she had spent her life believing this. She'd spent her life living this. And if I was telling her she didn't have to bother, think of all the time she's wasted going on 7-mile marches so that she can eat a cookie and feel okay about herself and look the way she thinks she needs to look, and maybe has to look, because I'll tell you, I know I lived through the 90s, right? My mother has explained things to me. The way she had to look in order to get a husband or to have a family or to be happy or to be approved of culturally. I'm not saying she was wrong. I'm just saying I don't know. I think that's also a consciousness that I hope goes the way of the dinosaur. Because I just think, what a waste. What a waste. So she needed me to get it. And I just didn't want to. And I just wasn't going to. Because I got that 20 years ago and it just wrecked my life. So no thanks. Not for me. If it makes your life better, right? Like, I'm sure there's people listening who are like, fuck you, Aaron. That's the only way I can live. Okay. Great. I'm that cool. If that works for you, right? And the reason I say all this, because you're talking to somebody, you're listening to somebody, that person becomes the most important person in the world. Other people's listening is the obstacle, among other obstacles, right? Your own listening becomes an obstacle. Your own listening is cluing you in to your consciousness. And we have this consciousness, this preconceived notion of how the world is supposed to work, whether we realize it or not, based on our history, based on our indoctrination, our early childhood training, our current training, our recent training, based on books we've read, scientific studies we've looked at, or had somebody look at for us, the internet, magazines, churches, religion, right? We all have it all over the place. We have it about the easy ones are easy to see, right? Food culture is easy for me to see. Diet culture is easy for me to see. People have it about politics, about nations, about ways of being, about the need to be right or wrong, right? Here's another example. Yesterday, so a lot of you know for the last 2 weeks, I've been on a film set. My husband and I wrote a movie. It was optioned and then sold, and then they filmed it, and we were there. We've been there a few days, not every day, but we've been there quite a bit. And yesterday was the last day of filming, so we were there for wrap day. It was amazing. Our star is just, she was just great. And the executive producer is just great. And the director is just great. And I'm going to just go down the line and start naming every single crew member. Everybody was amazing. Everyone was happy. Everyone was happy to be there. Super cool. Brought their A game, incredibly talented, loved the, being a part of the project. Like it was kind of a dream come true. I mean, I've been on a lot of sets. I've been on a lot of really nice sets, and I've been on some nightmare sets. And it was just really sweet and wonderful. Yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was also full of people who are the kind of people that want to do that work, right? One of the people we were working with is somebody from Russia. Who recently defected from Russia because he had taken a number of photos of Alexander Navalny. Sorry, we all know who I'm talking about, Alexander Navalny, the only person running for president against Putin, who recently was killed, died. So he had been close to the Navalnys and taken a lot of photos of them over the years, and just this. It was interesting listening to him share his experience as having been not a friend, but let's call it maybe an attaché or someone who was in their lives quite a lot, somebody who doesn't hate Russia, loves Russia, but really did not like Putin, and gave us his perspective on what's happening with Putin. His perspective of having been like a 50-year-old person who defected at 50, right? For fear of his life, or fear of jail time, or et cetera. So, and probably would like to go back at some point if ever he may, right? I mean, coming to this country, not really knowing very many people, looking for community. LA is a tough town to be a stranger in the first place, let alone coming for, that kind of reason, right? As a political dissident, I suppose. So it's just very interesting to me to hear him talk about his dad's Ukrainian, to hear him talk about Ukraine, Crimea, Putin, and then to hear other friends of mine, or think about conversations I've had with friends of mine from America, never been to Russia, never been to the Ukraine. I know what I'm saying is so controversial, but, and they know what's going on. They know. They know what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. They know. They know. They know certainly better than the guy I was working with yesterday because he's probably been captured, right? Oh, news media's been captured. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I'm just saying, like, you never been to Russia. You never been to Ukraine. You never read about Stalinic history. You never read about the KGB becoming the FSB. Like, I'm not saying nobody, but I'm thinking about this one particular friend of mine. But you know. Okay, right? Like, you know. Okay. Now, maybe he's definitely reading a lot of certain news sources and knows things I don't know, but just saying, like, I'm drawing the parallel between the consciousness of this person who just came from there, the consciousness of my friend who's really coming from one point of view, my consciousness coming from obviously another point of view, right? Very different point of view. Who's right? Who's right? Maybe we're all wrong. Maybe we're all just having our own individual consciousness experience of the topic at hand. And we're none of us right. And we're all of us right in some measure. And the truth of the consciousness is somewhere outside of and in the middle of all of it, right? But why does my consciousness get so worked up? So worked up about it.
What is that about? What is that consciousness about? So when we're talking about the person you're talking to is the most important person in the world, right? You're talking to somebody, you just want to get out of the conversation. Getting out of the conversation in a graceful way. The obstacle is, how do I get out of this conversation? But the stakes are, I want this person to think well of me because I'm a normal human that cares what other people think of me, even though I might pretend I don't. Right? Or you get to a point where I do see this with people as life goes on, you care less, and certainly you care less about certain things, but you still maybe want to be kind. So how do I get out of, right, this conversation with an elderly neighbor because I got to run and pick up my kid from school, but I don't want them to feel lonely because I do want to be kind and compassionate, right? That's a very worthy obstacle. The reason it's interesting to look at this, now, if you're an actor in a scene, you're looking at the lines, you're like, how do I get what I want while saving myself from the danger and the pitfall of this obstacle? That's what polite society does. Maybe you're in a conversation, and the conversation is, how do I have this conversation with this person I disagree with wildly while still holding respect for their humanity and their mind and their point of view and where they're coming from? Without needing to be right. Right? This is how we can use this tool in our own lives to better our lives. Because if I didn't need to be right, if I didn't need to be right, if I didn't have a consciousness that needed to be right, that needed to like get away from this resistance that makes me feel uncomfortable, what could I learn? What would that look like? Just as an experiment, would that be better? Maybe not, because I'm not talking about having no boundaries. I'm not talking about like letting somebody say some racist crap in front of you that makes you angry, right? I'm not talking about not calling out behavior that perhaps you find unjust. But you know the difference, right? So if I didn't have to have that consciousness, what could I learn? What would it look like? Just as an examination of the underside of that tapestry of my life, of my thought patterns. You can use this to analyze a scene in your own life. Now, I'm not one to say we should hyper-analyze what happened, right? Like, have you ever gotten into a conversation with somebody and then you go over that conversation again and again and again and you think about it and you think about it and think about it to the point where you actually kind of forget what really happened because you've thought about it so much you kind of don't know what are your thoughts, what are the thoughts that you wish had gone different? Like you lose the plot on the truth of what really happened and you suddenly find yourself just thinking about feeling uncomfortable with all of it, wishing it had gone differently, feeling awkward about this person or that conversation, right? So I don't recommend that. But I do recommend catching yourself in the moment if you can and asking yourself, what is it I'm trying to get out of this conversation? Is what I'm trying to get out of this conversation, now maybe I just want to connect with somebody. That's beautiful. Then have at it, right? But what if you're like, what I'm trying to get out of this conversation actually is bothering me? I feel like I've got this agenda and it makes me uncomfortable. So how can I overcome that agenda? Like in the example of the elderly neighbor that you just want to get out of the conversation to go pick your kids up from school, but you don't want them to feel bad. It's like, what stops us from just saying, you know, Leona, I would love to pick this conversation up again. I've got to pick my kids up from school. Would you like to come over for a cup of tea on Saturday morning? Or if that's like the furthest thing from what you want to do, like fine. There's so many ways you can go around that. But I'm just saying, right? Like, what if you, rather than feeling trapped, right? Rather than feeling trapped, rather than feeling, rather than feeling like you can't be free to speak your truth without hurting people, right? There's so many ways you could go about it. I know a lot of us might be like, yeah, that's so elementary. And yet, in the heat of the moment, when it's the heat of your moment, it is not, is it? It is not elementary. So, okay, that was my introduction. And I say that because I'm like, I'm going to go now look at the Facebook chat room and see who's over there. And I see it is 10:49 a.m. But that's okay. We still got a few minutes left. I always just want to say good morning. Good morning, Renee, Quelly, Morina, Karen. Good morning, everybody. Happy spring. Happy spring indeed. Happy spring to all of you. So, the next aspect of the tools for acting that I want to talk about are, because not just about consciousness, but now how to use these to better our lives. Subtext. I touched upon it, right? Subtext. Subtext is what is being thought or felt, but not overtly said, right? So like I gave you a million examples. For example, when my brothers listened to an album of mine, said, oh, that's different, isn't it? Now in Minnesota, that's different is code for, I don't like that, or I don't care for that. Or interesting means, well, that's weird, that's strange, right? Well, that's interesting. Or it can mean, I really don't agree with you. Or it might mean, I don't really have a response, so I'm just going to try to affirm your personhood, right? Right? It can mean a number of different things, all subtext, none of which is, that's interesting. So if I am talking to my mother and I'm talking about something and she's like, oh, interesting. That means I'm not really listening, but I want you to think I am. Now, I love my mom. I'm just saying, right? like that's just where I grew up. They're passive aggressive is how it is, right? Or if somebody has an issue with you, like my friend and I have another friend who's a Minnesota defector. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to pick on Minnesota. It's just where I'm from. So it's easy. But like, you know, you might piss somebody off and you will never know it. Because they will be so nice to you and they won't say a word. But then all of a sudden you are cut out of their life. You're like not invited to their barbecue on the weekend. You're not invited to their Christmas, ugly Christmas sweater party. And you're like, did I do something to offend them? And they just are too polite to say, you know, when you told me that I was an idiot for voting the way I voted, I was really offended. So I decided I was just going to cut you out and not tell you. Like, who's going to say that, right? Certainly not where I'm from. There are places where people will say that. I remember my German ex-boyfriend. He was like that. I don't know if all Germans are like that. I mean, I have another couple other lovely friends from Germany that are less brutal than he was, but pretty honest, pretty straight, like way more like, oh, I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking. Why wouldn't I tell you what I'm thinking? Right? But in my hometown, it's like, why would I tell you what I'm thinking? I'm just going to get chastised for that. No, thank you. Unless what I'm thinking is what you're thinking. And if we're thinking the same thing, nobody's going to get chastised. We're safe, right? It's just, I don't know, maybe it's the brutal weather in Minnesota that forces people to have to find community just to survive. And then it plays out in these weird little passive aggressive ways. And not everybody is like that. And it's not always like that. It's, you know, we hype up and exacerbate and exaggerate these things for comedic effect and or to make a point, right? But subtext, like I was talking about many neurodiverse people don't do subtext. They don't understand subtext. I'm sure there are other cultures that don't have subtext, but in this country, in this culture, or even in, like, I'm thinking about, you know, I've spent a lot of time in different European cultures, for example, and there's a different subtext. Or California has its own language, right? Like, there's this language in California cool. And it's like, no one's going to explain it to you. Probably no one could even explain it. You know that you're not California cool until you've lived here long enough to know that you are California cool. And you know, because you've sort of adopted this, like, you know, vocal fry, no affect, I'm really into organic, but I'm still going to do Botox kind of. I'm being silly, right? But you know that all of these, the exaggeration, exacerbation, extrapolation for comedic effect is actually based in my experience of there's this California cool. Perfect example, long time ago, maybe some of you might remember, I think it was the Golden Globes, might have been the Oscars, Lady Gaga. I think it was the Golden Globes. She went up to accept an award. She accidentally bumped into Leonardo DiCaprio. And there was a meme that went around of him like making this face like, oh, how dare you? Now, that's not what happened. What happened is in reality, he felt like a little surprised that he was in the way, in her way. I know this because I saw an interview after the fact where like Lady Gaga explained, no, he wasn't being rude. He felt bad he was in the way. And afterwards he apologized for making that face, even though it was just a normal face anybody would make. But because Leo is the epitome of California cool, it's like, oh my God, this unspoken rule of how you're supposed to behave. Nobody's going to tell you. And if you bump into somebody, you're not cool, right? It's like, I often tell people, it's like mid-century modern architecture. It's like, until you know why it's amazing, it's kind of ugly. or boring or uninteresting, right? It's not like some gorgeous Gothic castle or some amazing like Renaissance revivalist villa. It's just kind of a plain house with a landscape in the background. It's like once you learn about mid-century modern architecture, it's actually kind of amazing. But until you learn about it, you just know that like some people are really into it and you really don't know why, right? So I'm just saying this is another example of subtext. Like there's a subway that maybe Californians don't know it, but just being from not from California, I see it all. I see it, and I often don't have it because I'm often very exuberant, right? That show Curb Your Enthusiasm is about me. Not as I get older, but me the cheerleader, me the fairy godmother, me the teddy bear. It's like that show is a good example though of what I'm talking about, where there's just a sort of like way of behaving that's just very cool. And you don't try to be cool. You just are cool. You let the cool come to you, right? But I'm not cool. I'm like not a cool person. Like, of course, I'm a good person. I'm a loving person. I'm super fun. I'm funky. I can get down, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, I'm not naturally cool. But I've adopted a little bit of it from time to time because I've lived here long enough to look that to be able to perform cool if I need to in a social setting, right? So, like, I can totally play cool if I want to. I just don't always want to. And sometimes cool can be cool, right? Like, if I think about California cool, if I think about 1950s bebop jazz, for example, is like a really radical, awesome version of what I'm talking about. But, and I don't mean to be slamming Minnesota, and I don't mean to be slamming California. We could talk about New York City, right? I'm walking here. We could talk about the South, right? Bless your heart. We could talk about any place is going to have their rules and codes of behavior that if you're not from that place, you don't know them or they're going to be weird to you. This is an example. This is an easy way to explain subtext. Okay, so I have come to the end of another episode of the Erin Carrera Show. I hope that you enjoyed it or found it fun. I didn't even get to talk about I was going to tell you all about the movie set, but maybe I'll just wait till the movie comes out and then ask you all to watch it. We'll see. Anyhow, if you want to come find me on 12listen.com/Erin, that's Erin with an E. And until next week, I love you. Happy spring. Bye-bye.